prophecy update today, and I'm going to ask Olivier to open us in a word of prayer.
Lord, thank you for giving us an opportunity to live for such a time as this, Lord. We have so much that we can do for your kingdom. We are so much that we can do to make a difference. So Lord, guide us, help us, understand your word, help us understand the current events. And Lord, thank you for dying for us. We know the end of the story. We just want to finish strong. In Yeshua's name we pray. Amen.
Okay, well, this is Olivier Melnick with Shalom and Messiah Ministries. It's a new ministry that he started recently. And you can, what is the website? Shalom and Messiah?
ShalomandMessiah.com.
Okay. And if you want to help contribute, and he talked a little bit about it at the end of the first hour, if you want to go watch that video. And again, on YouTube, like, subscribe, and that type of thing. And I will say, we're going to open comments and chat and that type of thing again this week, but we always reserve the right to discipline you in an appropriate manner if we think you're getting off track. So we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to try to limit this to an hour. Olivier has a flight sometime today that we want to make sure he makes it. And
thank you.
Not that we want him to leave, but so this is one of the things I talk about. And so Olivier and I will disagree on the timing of the rapture, but pretty much agree on everything else.
Amen.
We're both premillennial. To me, that's the dividing line. That's the one where I really hard stop on that. And we'll see, you know, the best proof of who's right will be when it actually happens, right? And it, when any of this happens. But this is one of the things I talk about. This is what is a grid that I use to analyze news, current events. And I look at things, you know, Islam, rise of Islam, apostasy in the church, geopolitical unrest, wars, rumors of wars, and of course, Israel. Israel is really at the heart and center of all this. And so we look at things, we're looking at acceleration, convergence, logistics, and understanding. Well, probably bring in a little bit of this today. And I don't know if Olivier's ever seen this. This is my Jerusalem is a cup of trembling attempt. You know, that's my kind of putting my little Photoshop thing. And then this is sort of my view of how the four seals, the first four seals, the horsemen, they increase in intensity over time during this last period of human history. So that's just sort of my basic, a little bit of my basic
that's
framework.
John the artist.
That's I'm not drawing anything. So this is sort of the center of everything. Israel,
yes.
Of course, is the
yes.
Center of Bible prophecy. This was my title slide last week, and I'd use it again this week. The conflict mainly right now between Persia and Iran. And so what do you see in terms right now of Persia and Iran and Israel?
Well, I was going to ask you the same question, going back to a couple of weeks ago when Iran attacked Israel, it felt, of course, you know, it was definitely a miracle that 99% of the Iron Dome was successful. I mean, you think about it, when you think about the Iron Dome, think about somebody shooting a bullet at a bullet and stopping the bullet. That's about it, in a bigger shape. So I'm looking at what Iran did, and I can't help but thinking that they were just... they knew they were not going to succeed, but they wanted to scare people enough so that they would be able to define who's on our side and who's not. So it was not like, oh, we're going to destroy Israel overnight. They just wanted to push the envelope to see, okay, so France and England and Jordan and the U.S., they're going to go with Israel if something bigger happens or when something bigger happens.
And so, Saudi Arabia,
right,
Arab Emirates.
Exactly. So I think this was, they were testing the water to see, okay, who's on our side? China, Russia, you know. And would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that... I think it was a big attack.
It was
bigger than any that they've ever done.
And from land to land, it was not by proxy. That was the big thing.
Right. It was Israel, or it was Iran going actually attacking the land of Israel
right.
directly. And they, you know, Iran is usually of the mindset that we'll fight to the death of the last, you know, the last Lebanese.
Right.
The last dead Lebanese.
From a distance, yes. Yes.
And that's why, Ryan, these are just some pictures. These are propaganda posters that you see in Tehran. Here's another one. And, you know, so it shows they're really big on this thing. And they failed, in a sense, but they probably gathered a lot of intel in the attack.
Yeah, that's what I think they did. I think they were gathering information to prepare for the next one. Now, is it, you know, what I don't know, I mean, we keep hearing reports that they're, you know, we've been hearing reports for 5 years now, or if not more, that they're you know, weeks or months of having the bomb. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
They say, you know, I heard this week that there are 3 weeks. But it's been 3 weeks or 1 week or 10 days
right.
or four months for like 12 years.
Yes, yes.
I mean, when did Netanyahu put that little bomb thing together?
At the UN?
At the UN. That's got to be 8 years ago.
Eight or 9 years ago, yeah. Yeah. So that's that. They keep saying that. And but I don't even think they're going to go, they would go for a nuclear attack. Maybe I'm naive.
Yeah. But do I see a hand for a question?
Yes.
Go ahead.
One of the counterattack spots was Isfahan. Do either of you know the battle damage assessment on it?
I do not. The only thing I know about Isfahan, I do have a thing from last week. This is a sort of a, this is a graphic of Isfahan. I think I have one that might show some damage. No, that's an older one. That was another attack that they did on Isfahan. They did take out they took out a Soviet S-300, Soviet manufactured S-300 air defense system. So I think part of it's a chess game, right? They're kind of going back and forth. And so they didn't want to, Israel didn't want to escalate it to where the whole region erupts in war, and Iran didn't want to do that. So they sent an attack over, 300 drones and missiles. Israel repelled it all, although a few big missiles did land on the ground in Israel.
One in the Dead Sea?
One in the Dead Sea, and another one, some people were hiking and they came across one that, I forget the name of the city in the south.
And when you say big, they're the length of maybe 10 of those chairs. I mean, they're that big and very, I mean, they're huge things. They're not little things that, you know, you can just, you know, shoot from a...
I could probably see over top of it.
Of what?
Of the missile laying down.
That's a short joke.
Okay. We're looking for a small stool, but... No, he's not that short, really.
Just remember, the last will be first.
That's right.
Okay, so.
Well, there's going to be some effort involved in getting me off the ground.
Back to the topic.
That's right. So, what you're asking? So they did. Israel did a strategic attack. They did take out this S-300 system, and I think it was very specifically targeted. Like, listen. We can take out your air defense system when we want, and you can't do anything about it.
That's
now,
right.
One of the things that they've talked about is that they may have used a air-launched missile or glide bomb, which is a little bit newer technology, where they can release the missile or the glide bomb like 60, 80 miles away from the target. Usually, the air defense will have a range of 13 or 14 miles. So now they're saying, see, we can get you and attack you and take out a specific target outside of your air missile defenses.
This was done with surgical precision, really. Mm-hmm. And it's like going on going inside a hospital in a hostile environment. You go inside the hospital and then you remove a mole on somebody being operated on, and nobody sees you removing the mole, and you leave and you're done. You say, hey, by the way, when you were doing all this, we removed the mole. You didn't even see us. That was surgical precision, and the purpose was, and they could have done a lot more, but like you said, they were. It was to send a signal like, we can do this any day, anytime, anyhow we want.
And it's interesting, and we'll talk a little bit more about this because I've got some other slides, but Iran hasn't responded. And people in Iran are really upset. There's a lot of trouble with the regime. Do you think the regime will fall in Iran?
I hope it will. I'm old enough to remember pre-1979, you know, before the Shah was deposed.
The Shah was actually pro-Israel. His son, by the way, who's still alive, the crown prince, he's pro-Israel, been to Israel recently. Yeah.
I mean, the Shah was not the nicest person, but it was, you know, yes, I don't know if it's if they're going to be, if the regime is going to be deposed, but it's going to take the people of Iran to really, and the people of Iran, I mean, a lot of them are pro-Israel, actually. I've seen some testimonies, amazing testimonies of the Iranian. They don't adhere to the ideologies of the mullahs and the ayatollahs.
So my concern is that I believe Daniel 10 and the Prince of Persia, which Michael encountered. Remember Daniel? He was sent to go speak to Daniel, and he gets to Daniel. He says, "For 21 days, I've been trying to get through, but I've been resisted by the Prince of Persia." And I think that Prince of Persia still operates today. There's a demonic entity behind the Persian Iranian government. And so that's very strong. And my fear is, I know there's a lot of optimism. I'm a lawyer, so maybe I'm naturally pessimistic. I'm like the pathologist, you know. Everything looks great except that one little cell here that really, but I'm concerned about Iran and the Prince of Persia power behind it. My concern is if the mullahs fall, something's going to fill that vacuum. Yes. And what's going to fill that vacuum is not, I don't think it's going to be a democratic, freedom-loving movement. It probably, at least right now,
dictator of
would
some
be
sort.
The Iranian Revolutionary Guard would fill that vacuum. Because they have tremendous money, tremendous power. They're like the, I think I liken them to the mafia. You know, they parcel out territories and industries and that type of thing. So Ayatollah Khamenei controls a fortune is estimated of around $100 billion. Really one of the, if, you know, he had all access to all that money, he would be one of the richest people on the planet. But the Iranian Revolutionary Guard controls a similar fortune, and they use that to fund their operations. So they're going to fund their operations independent of the government. They'll work with the government, but if the government's gone, they're not going anywhere. So you would have to take out all of them. And Israel did, I mean, that was an amazing strike in Damascus. They took out about 15 of these guys, is my understanding.
They have the intel, and I just don't know how much of Israel's hands are tied right now by the U.S. I mean, it's you know what? Maybe you have some information on that.
No, well, Israel's hands who's are tied the, who, by the U.S. This is Zahedi.
Okay,
he was the top Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps taken out on April 1st in Damascus. And what's the characteristic that you notice about this guy? This is why I think the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is a much bigger deal. I mean, you can get rid of the mullahs, but you still have guys like Zahedi and Soleimani. And Soleimani and Zahedi had a physical characteristic in common. Can you see what it is? The Islamic, radical Islamic prayer bump. You see, here's a little closer in. You see how he has that, like a callus in his forehead?
Is that what it is?
It's a prayer bump from a devout Muslim.
I learned something today. From John.
And then here's the, this is the Ayatollah. This was a, you, I think you had seen a similar.
Yes, yeah, I've seen that
editorial
one.
Editorial
yeah.
cartoon, anything. So here, like, you know, here's a picture of the of a missile. There. So these were not inconsequential things. There were about 8 or 10 ballistic missiles that were fired. I guess it would be 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
But, and you know, so this is the Tehran papers, you know, iron lies, and they lie about everything. So let's move on to, let's talk about the student thing that's going on, because I think that's a big deal. So this is the opinion section of today's New York Times. And it's like, what's the title of it? What do you see in this picture? And it's all the signs. Anti-Gaza, anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, what do you think of all this? I mean, this is your area of expertise, anti-Semitism and the rise of anti-Semitism in this time.
What's happening on the campuses? Columbia is just one of them. What's happening in the campuses is the continuation of this normalization of anti-Semitism since October 7th. We have seen anti-Semitism come out of the box, and do an analogy is like anti-Semitism is like right now is like toothpaste. It's been pressed out of the tube. You can't put it back in. It's impossible to put it back in. And so right now, it's not going back in. It's only going to increase and increase and increase. And I'm noticing that something that I never thought I would even think in my lifetime, that anti-Semitism is becoming trendy. It's like, it's cool to be anti-Semitic now. People, they don't even have a clue what it really means. When the youngsters on the campus, they say, from the river to the sea, they were interviewed by a conservative channel, like Newsmax, and they were asking, so what river and what sea? I don't know, the Gaza River, the Black Sea, they didn't know. They had no idea. They just thought that, hey, it's social justice. We're fighting for social justice. We don't have to know what it is. We know it's a good cause. As a matter of fact, there was also people asking the people who were doing protest on Columbia, what are you protesting against? And she looked at her girlfriend, like maybe 20-year-old. She goes, what are we? I don't know. They did not know. They just knew that they wanted to be part of that that crowd that was saying something against Israel. But when you hear what they're saying, you know, burn Tel Aviv to the ground, final solution. They are in that group. A lot of students that are completely clueless because they haven't been educated in the universities for a long time now, and they've been indoctrinated by Marxists. That's, you know, what happened. And so a lot of them don't have a clue, but in the mix there are also people who very much have a clue and they want to get rid of the Jews, and it's hard to decipher who is who. What are you showing on the picture here?
Well, this is just some articles, editorials in the New York Times this morning. You know, the student-led protests aren't perfect. That doesn't mean they're not right. That's one, you know, what you would expect from the New York Times. And then, of course, David French.
I don't know. Leave the French alone.
This one, it's okay to be against this French guy.
Okay.
He's, you know, he used to be a conservative, and then he's just turned into this murky kind of mishmash of a lot of really bad ideas. But he says colleges are going off the deep end. There is a way back. You mentioned something first hour about Ilhan Omar.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about
it. I just got this morning. I was watching my news feed, and Ilhan Omar went to, you know, it was basically a photo op, of course. She went on the campus where the encampment is, the campus of Columbia University. Her daughter is a student there, and she talked to some of the protesters, and then she, you know, showed her face, and then, you know, hug and everything. And then she was asked by a reporter as she was walking away, you know, what do you think about all the anti-Semitism against the Jewish students? And she goes, I think it's deplorable. And she might have not used that word, but the end, I know exactly that's what she said at the beginning. She said, it's despicable, whatever. It shouldn't happen that Jewish students should suffer from anti-Semitism. And then she added this. So it sounded good. And then she added this. Regardless if they're pro-genocide or anti-genocide. And she was not talking about the genocide committed by Hamas on October 7th, the 1,200 Israeli people who died. Terrible death. She was talking about what the world is seeing today, post-October 7th, the genocide, quote-unquote, of the Palestinians in Gaza. And I don't have an exact number because nobody really knows. I mean, they're talking about, what, 34,000 people?
Well, I've heard 34,040. It's interesting. It's been like 32,000 for like 8 weeks.
Right. So
it hasn't really gone.
We don't know, but we know that that Israel is taking a lot of precautions, and they as they always do. And this is why it's taking so long. Because if they really wanted to get rid of the whole thing, although you do have the problem with the hostages, if any of them are still alive, they could have just, you know, just destroyed the whole Gaza Strip and call it quits. But they're taking so long because they they want to bring those hostages home, and they want to make sure that they eradicate Hamas, but they don't want to kill any Gazan citizen, innocent Palestinians. There are some. And they're probably less than I always think positive. Like, a lot of Palestinians are not necessarily pro-Hamas, but I think when Hamas was voted, 70%, they got 70% of the votes when they were in 2006.
Yeah, and all the surveys, my friends at the IDSF have done surveys, and everybody's finding, like, in Gaza and in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria,
right,
among Arabs, support for Hamas is well above 80%.
So, yeah. And so Hamas is painted as the underdog. I don't know why. And then so young people in America and probably parts of the world, and it's going to keep growing. And I think they're just the same, pretty much the same kids and the same other people joining forces that had nothing better to do when BLM kind of died off. So now they found another cause. The problem is that when it involves the Jews, we don't know how bad it's going to get, and we don't know how long it's going to get. It's going to get ugly. And I wrote an article on my blog. I just posted it a couple of days ago. And the title of the article, I know it sounds very encouraging. I said, "Are they building the next Jewish ghetto?" Let me explain. This is a theory, okay? Mm-hmm. Let me explain. Based on my research of the last 23 years and what happened in the 30s and 40s, Jews are asked by some of their rabbis and Jewish professors to go home from the universities. Finish your studies online. Graduation ceremonies like at USC, and I don't know, maybe more by now, but a couple of days ago USC said, "We're not going to have a graduation ceremony, too dangerous." So they're starting to tell people from all those schools, Jewish kids, you know, go home. It's not safe for you. You need to go home. You need to be where it's safe. At the same time, some of these people doing the riots on the university campuses have published, yeah, and I'm sure you heard about that, they published the names and some private information about Jewish professors and probably also Jewish students, so that their home address is known. So if somebody wants to go there, and it will happen, somebody wants to go there, they will go there and cause harm. So now we've got the authorities telling the Jewish people, it's not safe for you, so you can't just be Jewish safely anymore. There was a guy in London, it's not the universities, but in London, he was at a protest, a pro-Palestinian protest, and he was wearing a yarmulke, which is becoming more and more, it already looks like a target, but it's becoming more and more of a target. He was wearing a yarmulke on the street, across the street, with a group of people, you know, in support of Israel. And the police came to him and says, "You can't stay here. You're too Jewish." Because he was wearing a yarmulke. So the Jews are being told, it's not safe for you. It sounds good, but it's not safe for you to be Jewish in public. So go home. Next thing is what? You know, they know where you live. Let us help you to go in a place where it's even safer and keep you together, safe from harm.
For your own good.
For your own good. In my book, it's called The Ghetto. And after the ghetto, they had the trains. After the trains, they had the death camp. I know it sounds terrible, but I think this is where it's going.
So here's a couple headlines. This is from...
I would like your opinion on that, by the way.
Well, I think this is what's happening. And look, it's driving the Jews back to Israel. I mean, Israel's been attacked. They're in a war right now.
Still the safest place in the world.
The safest place in the world for them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
It's a little bit hard to wrap your heads around. So these are just some headlines from recent Tehran Times. I always read... So, like, I read the New York Times, I read the Tehran Times, I read the Jerusalem Post. I'm sort of use the Cal Thomas approach. He would get up every morning and say, I read my Bible to figure out what God's doing, and then I read the New York Times to figure out what the other side is doing. And it's generally pretty true.
Yeah.
And you can actually extract some truth from New York Times articles, but Tehran Times, inside the fall of the academic brainwashing project. The project that Tehran, the Iranian government, says is the brainwashing project is that there are people on campuses that actually support Israel. That's their brainwashed.
So they're spinning the whole thing around.
They're flipping it upside down.
They're flipping it upside down.
This is what they do all the time.
Yes.
And so here, campus crackdown abetting genocide. So the people on campus are saying, kill the Jews, burn Tel Aviv.
And you show a picture Tehran like this.
And Tehran Times says, yes, cracking down on the protesters is abetting the Israeli genocide. So this is, maybe this is Ilhan Omar's favorite newspaper now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because of what they say. This is interesting from the London Times today. The only thing they agree on, everyone else is the bigot. So there doesn't seem to be any middle ground, any common ground. I think Humboldt, California, University of California,
Humboldt. Yes.
Which I think is up north.
Yes.
In California.
Yeah, it's up north.
They probably have a whole majoring in weed and usage and the pharmaceutical properties of weed and distribution and their business program up there. But they've canceled.
And you know that
for the
because
rest of the year. I'm a bigot. I'm a bigot against Northern California because they're a bunch of crazy people up there.
Right.
I mean, do you ever venture really very far north of Sacramento?
We lived in California for a while with our family for 11 years. My wife is from California. I have ventured, we took the whole coast when we moved back to Seattle, thinking that Seattle would be a better place than California.
Good
and
choice.
Then we defected and moved to Texas. When I go up north, I'll go as north as Bakersfield, because at Brendan Holt House Church, right. I feel I'm safe.
Right. So, and Brandon and I did a show the other day called on Tip of the Spear, so I don't know if that's published yet or not.
Wonderful guy. Great guy.
Yeah, great friend of both of us.
Yes.
So, this is a big problem. It's all, I mean, they were having protests down at the Ohio State University this week as well.
They did. I read that.
So this is in the Financial Times, okay, a financial newspaper. They have this big article in yesterday's paper, a Columbia diary. And essentially she says, it's not really that bad. It's all overblown. I don't know what people are so upset about. It's just a bunch of kids out there protesting. And this is Ross Douthat. You can get his at the New York Times today. And he's kind of a central type guy.
It's making its way through the entire academia, because I saw a cartoon the other day. It was perfect. It was a student with like a big question mark on his head, and the teacher, the professor, was going like, I don't know if he forgot if he was wearing a keffiyeh or anything, but he was saying, Palestine shall be free. And the student goes, this is chemistry. But that's where we are right now. I mean, you go take a class in anything, and the false Palestinian narrative will be shoved down your throat for 4 years, and that's what you get. You get those kids who have no idea of no clue of history. 33% of American youth Gen Zs do not know what the Holocaust was, and 37%, and I think those are from, I don't know where I got those numbers, but I got the source at home, 37% who know the Holocaust cannot name one camp and don't know what Auschwitz is, and we're only 80 years down the road.
Well, what were they yelling at Columbia?
Okay. Final solution.
They're yelling final solution. And what else were they yelling? Go back to Poland.
Go back to Poland. Yes.
That's where Auschwitz was.
Of course, in Krakow. In Auschwitz. Yeah, next to Krakow. Yes.
And so they don't even know their history or anything.
You're going to talk about the keffiyeh?
I'm going to talk about the keffiyeh. I don't have it. You know the Palestinian keffiyeh that they wear? The headscarf? Okay, so there's people who've been analyzing that recently. And this is a guy named Sahir 5BT, Sahir 5BT on Twitter. And I said, Olivier, this and that. I tried to bring it up, but I probably messed up everything. And so so they have like two blue lines, or two lines, and then they have like wavy lines in between. That's actually comes from an Assyrian symbol, and it represents the area between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. And the lines with the sort of not looking thing, that's a represents a fishing net. And so they're appropriating it, as one Jewish person said. They're even colonizing Assyrian symbols to support, the kafiyah supports this claim from the river to the sea. What do they mean by that?
Well, hold on, I was going to, if I send you something, you can publish it on the...
I can try to publish it.
Because I was going to send you something else about the kafiyah that's very telling.
Okay.
And this is obviously not rehearsed.
Let me...
Okay, so if you can publish your... well, you know what you need is Apple TV here.
Well, I do have that, but I...
I don't want to waste it.
It's not letting me share. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, but I want you to look at the way and who made the kefia popular? Yasser Arafat.
Mm-hmm.
He wore it every day. Did you know that every time he wore his kefia on the right side, he pinned it to his coat and to his collar and to his jacket in the shape of Palestine?
Oh.
Every time he went, he took the time, because it's not worn that way on one side only.
Right.
But he always pinned it in the shape of Israel, the full thing. Look at the photos. Every single time. That's what I just sent you. See, look at this picture.
Yeah, hang on, maybe I can...
Oh, look at that. We're fancy here. So, yeah, I mean, the kefia from the river to the sea, is it, you want me to explain that? I mean, are you online right now?
Yeah.
So put Arafat kefia and you'll get that picture.
I don't know how to spell kefir.
What?
I don't know how to spell it that well.
Yeah, hold on. I'll tell you.
I'm going to get in a bunch of pictures.
Put Arafat, just put Arafat and with K-E-F-F-I-A-H.
Okay, Arafat.
If you just put Arafat, that should be enough because he wears it always the same way. But sometimes you want to see the front. Arafat kefia. And that's, yeah. There you go. He always pins it. And it looks a little different depending on how he moves. But it's always pinned. It's never that, nobody wears it that way. Only Arafat.
Interesting.
And so you learn something from Olivia too.
I do, yeah.
Our job is done. Yeah, I learned from him. He learned from me. We're done.
There you go. I did not know that. And you know where the whole Palestinian idea came from.
What do you mean the whole Palestinian?
Well, the Palestinian people were created out of whole cloth by the KGB back in the 1960s.
Who put him in place.
Put him in
yes.
power.
He's, by the way, he's Egyptian. Was, right?
Yeah, can I expound on that a little bit?
Please, it's your show.
So there's a guy you should look up. His name is Francisco Gil White. He was a tenure-track professor at University of Pennsylvania, and he started writing about his views of the Palestinian-Arab-Israel conflict, and he got fired. He is superb, and he did an interview. I can't remember the name of the guy. The guy interviews all kinds of different people, even some crazy nuts. And the guy is excellent, but he made a point. Arafat, there was a very critical guy in I'll call it Palestinian, for lack of a better term, Palestinian history, the Hajj Aman al-Husseini.
The
Hajj from the 1920s.
The Grand Mufti.
The Mufti, who
yeah.
worked with Hitler, helped Hitler with his final solution.
Yep.
He was a fugitive after World War II. He fled to Iraq. By the way, the Hajj, it is believed, there's pretty good evidence that the Hajj had a nephew that he trained. Yasser Arafat.
I've heard that.
He then went to, I think Jimmy DeYoung used to talk about this a lot too, but he went to Iraq and he lived with a guy who was starting the Ba'ath Party. A Marxist, leftist, anti-Jew, pro-Arab party.
Yeah.
And he lived with this guy for a while. And this guy had a nephew. His name was Saddam Hussein. So can you see the circle connecting there a bit? And then the Russians came in and used these guys to kind of foment unrest in the Middle East, and then they could say, oh, we're on the side of these people and that type of thing. So it's
so to circle back to you're talking about the kefiat from the river to the sea. You talked about the fishnet and the sea waves that you see. We see them very well on the picture here, you know, the waves and the sea. I did not know that, actually. That was very informative.
Those would represent the two rivers.
Yeah, from the river to the sea.
This would be the waves, the river. And then this is the fishing net from the river to the sea.
And the understanding is that from the river to the sea right now is from the Euphrates or the Tigris. Right now is the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea.
Correct.
Okay, so it's Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. What's between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea? Israel. Most of the kids don't know that, because you would ask him to point to Israel on the map, they probably won't even know. It's so small. From the river to the sea basically is a euphemism for genocide. Kill the Jews. And so that's what they're saying. Some of them know why they're saying it, and some of them don't. But the danger is the same. What's next?
Whoops. There we go. That's one of my favorite graphics of Israel right now, because it kind of gives you the geographic problem. You've got the coastal plain where most of the Israeli Jews and Arabs live, and then you have what's called the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, and then Jerusalem would be in that dark part in the middle. So you have Judea to the south, Samaria to the north, and what's characteristic of it? It's the high ground, and this is what they want for a two-state solution, and I think we're going to get to that in a little bit, but that's, I just think that's a great...
And the Gaza Strip is on the bottom left of the red part.
That little tiny part down
here. You see those little white lines on the bottom left by the ocean? That's the Gaza Strip right there.
Like right in this area here.
Yeah.
This area right here. So it's not that much. Jerusalem would be up... Well, now they moved me in. There you go. Israel would be right in here. Of course, this up here at the north, that's Mount Hermon, about 10,000 feet above sea level.
Snow.
A lot of snow. Caesarea Philippi, Tel Dan. And you've had a tour. You had a tour to cancel. You had to cancel, didn't you?
We had a tour going with some of you might know Jeff Kinley and Todd Hempson, the Prophecy Pros, and we had a tour, the three of us leading a tour, and we were getting on a plane on October 8th. Needless to say, we did not.
You were supposed to be here last Sunday, but we had to move it to this Sunday because why?
Right, because I was going to be in Israel. I called John a couple of months ago. I said,
well,
John,
you were supposed to fly on the Saturday the 13th.
I said, John, I have an opportunity to go with Brandon Holthouse and a couple of his pastors to serve the IDF, to pray for them, to pray with them, to bring him things, and to do ministry there. So it was not a tour like I'm taking every year, you know, like I'm supposed to take at the end of this year. It was a mission trip, so to speak, and it was supposed to start from the 13th through the 20th. And on Saturday night, Sunday morning, I was going to fly to Boston and Boston to Tel Aviv. On Saturday night, they closed Ben Gurion, they closed the skies because Iran was like sending missiles right and left. So we had to cancel again. So I had somebody in my Bible study at church. They said, Olivier, if you pick a third date and something else happens, maybe you should stop picking dates and not go to Israel anymore. So I'm starting to develop a little bit of a complex.
Or
maybe
just let everybody know when you're going and they can schedule some other time. And then if you get to go, everything will be wide open. You know, you won't have any crowds.
Great idea.
Anywhere.
What is this?
Who's funding this? That's the question.
Funding what? The colleges?
The colleges.
I think that Soros has probably some money in that.
By the way, I saw a video. They have like whole stations of hygiene products and food and trays of food. And this is
supposed to be spontaneous.
It is. It is spontaneous.
You look at the pictures. All the tents are the same shape, same size, same color. They all called each other in the morning. Say, what color is your tent today? It's financed. Those tents were purchased. They were okay. Here is your pack. You got a tent. You got your sign that was pre-printed, like those corrugated plastic political signs you see on lawns. And this is all organized. This is not spontaneous. Sorry for yelling.
And this is a memo that an Iranian guy got from the Iranian government, and the English translation, I'll just save you trying to squint and read that, essentially says, organize these colleges into protests. That's an Iranian government thing. So this is well-funded on many different levels for many different people, none of which have anybody's best interest at heart. So this is Michael Oren. Today, say he's calling it manipulated education, and you know we support free speech, but where do we draw the line? Is the question.
You draw the line when other people's lives are at risk,
or you're a Christian praying at an abortion clinic.
Well, yeah, but not.
That's
of course.
That's an extreme.
Of course.
So here's I'm just going to play a clip. I got this from Caroline Glick off her Twitter feed this morning. To contend successfully with your enemy, you need to listen to him and take him seriously. In our world, what passes for strategy begins with ignoring and dismissing the importance of the enemy and blaming ourselves for the enemy's aggression. This is why we are in danger. And by the way, go to her Twitter feed, at Caroline Glick, and look at the responses that... In my view, I think you guys were going to interview her when you were in Israel, and I'm trying to schedule one with her too, so pray it all comes together for all of us. A great lady, a great Jewish lady, a great thinker, writer, articulate.
Yes.
And I remember years ago she was at a conference. You can look it up. It was a Jerusalem Post conference, and there was some knucklehead from an EU country that said something about, well, you Jews, you're really to blame for what happens to you. And it was so funny because she's sitting there and it was almost like a Top Gun scenario where, you know, target acquired, radar lock, and fire. And she sets down her glass and she just blasts the sky to oblivion. It's one of, you can find it on the internet. It's probably
she's very articulate, so. And she thinks on her feet. And
but listen to what this rabbi says in, and then this came from a tweet. The protests are about what they say, globalize the intifada. Listen to this, Rabbi. I think it's a great response to that claim.
The protests are about what they say it's about. From the river to the sea. Globalize the intifada. Why globalize the intifada? Do they know what that was? It was a mass murder campaign. On the streets of Israel, in restaurants, schools, buses, hospitals. On one of my visits to Israel during those years, I met Nathan, a security guard. On September 4th, 2001, he was on patrol outside a hospital in Jerusalem. It was 7 a.m. Someone brought to his attention a suspicious-looking person, and so we went to check out who that was. And he saw a man that looked in every way like an ultra-Orthodox Jew. There appeared to be nothing wrong, nothing seemed unusual. But then Nathan noticed something a bit strange. He saw that this ultra-Orthodox Jew was wearing a backpack. He looked into the man's eyes. He felt a powerful surge of danger. He told me that he immediately cocked his rifle, but hesitated firing for one brief second. And at that second, the terrorist who disguised himself as a Haredi Jew exploded his backpack. Nathan spent 2 weeks in a coma. During his stay in the hospital, the chief of the Israeli police came to visit. The chief said that they caught another terrorist working with the first one, who revealed in interrogation that their intention was to go into the hospital that Nathan was guarding and to explode themselves in the baby ward. That was the Intifada. That is what American students want to globalize. This is social justice. Fighting to dismantle the world's only Jewish state by blowing yourself up in a maternity ward? By taking babies and children hostage, by murdering 1,200 innocent souls in their bedrooms? Woe to the students who believe these ideas. Woe to their teachers who taught them these ideas. Woe to administrators who do not reject these ideas loudly.
He's right. So yep. Where do you see this going on the political side? Because now, you know, there's this push to free the hostages. Not everybody. There's a very big divide in Israeli society. Right. Most want to finish the job in Gaza, but there's a very vocal group that says we got to get the hostages out. And what do you think is going to happen politically?
Honestly?
It's easy to say there's no right answer because you have 12 different answers.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. I mean, I know that, and that's not even a shared opinion. I know that I believe that Netanyahu is the right man for the job right now. And he's, you know, he is between a rock and a hard place because I think they have to finish the job in Gaza. If they don't completely eradicate Hamas, it's just gonna grow. It's like a bad weed. It's gonna grow back and it's gonna do more damage. The thing that they have for themselves is that Israel is you know, the difference is that the Israelis value life where the other side worships death. So there's no connection there.
You keep talking. I'm going to play. This is a proof of life video that Hamas released. So there's no sound to it. So go ahead.
And so I think that Israel needs to finish the job in Gaza and eradicate Hamas. What they might do, and we've seen some of that, we heard some of that, you and I were talking about it this morning. They said that if the hostages are released, I think there's like 133 still left.
I've heard maybe only 20.
Okay, well,
I think it's more than 133 that.
133 not returned. We don't know how many still alive. Nobody knows, okay? And they got two videos of two of the guys. Oh, that's him. That's one of the two videos, but we don't even know if those videos are actually done yesterday or...
They almost look AI generated in some respects, I
think. Yeah, that's also possible. So I don't think they're that good, though. But anyway, the people doing the AI, I'm saying. So I think they need to finish the job. But what they might do is they might wait. They might say, like, you know, we're not going to go do the final obliteration of Gaza if the hostages are coming back. But there were mixed messages even this morning where they might have said that. Who said that? Who did you hear that from this morning? They said they're going to hold off. You mentioned the name to me.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that.
Okay. And this might
be... Foreign Minister. Israel Katz.
This might be a way to say we're not going to... And then do it and when people don't expect it. So it might be like a strategy to get to them.
Do you know what these guys are saying? Here's an excerpt. Hamas posted a video to Israeli hostages where they asked, seemingly under pressure and reading from a script, to keep pressuring the Israeli government to accept Hamas conditions. Hamas added a title at the end, force your Nazi government to accept the deal because we don't have much time left, is supposedly what these men said. Their families say they're thin. If they're still alive, they've been there for 6 months, over 200 days now. This is terrible. This is a video that, this is a Lebanese Syrian lady. I want you to listen to just a minute of this.
Now, is there sound to those videos?
I have sound to this one. That one was
No, 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 wait. Stop. I have never seen that video. Again, as you can see, this is very, very well rehearsed. The videos of the two hostages right now. There's Arabic on the screen. Is there sound in an original one that we can actually hear them say what they're saying?
Yeah, you can hear what they're
saying. Okay, because I was going to say, if it's only word from Arabic words but no sound, I don't trust what they're saying, so you have to have somebody read the lips.
I can start it up and see if they're...
Oh, no, that's... Okay, so speaking Hebrew. Okay.
Okay, so here's a Syrian Lebanese woman. Listen to what she says.
I am Syrian Lebanese. I'm also a German citizen. I'm one of many millions who had to leave the Middle East. I'm one of the few who still remember why we had to leave. Life was hell, and it still is for the majority of people in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Iran, thanks to the Iranian regime and its allies and proxies. The Iranian regime, you claim, has the right to defend itself. Its proxies, such as Hamas, that you are championing on the streets in the West. Have you ever wondered why we haven't seen mass pro-Palestine protests in the Middle East? See, in the West, you are privileged. You can demand even without understanding. Back where I come from, we don't demand. We are grateful if we find the means to feed our children, to pay the rent, to buy our medication. We are thankful if we're not arrested, tortured, and raped. You should know that you are supporting our oppressors, that you are betraying us, all of us, the Gazans included.
So this is a great article by Douglas Murray. I won't go into it in the New York Post the other day. You can find it online very easily. And he's talking about what the Hague Criminal Court is doing. They're threatening to arrest all of the Israeli leadership if they leave Israel. So that if they came to the UN, they would have to have rock solid agreements in place to leave the country. They want to do this with Netanyahu. They want to do this with others. And this is coming from a British prosecutor at the International Criminal Court. This is where this is going. By the way, have they said this about Sinwar or Hania? Hania, he just flew from Qatar, the political leader of Hamas, from Qatar to Istanbul. He's been up to Iran. Hamas representatives have been to Russia. This whole thing is very bothersome to me. So here's Caroline Glick again. And she says, listen, this is bad. And again, go to @CarolineGlick, follow her, read the comments in response. So she posted this about the International Criminal Court. And she said, this is going to be very bad. So it got retweeted by this despicable, disgusting human being. And if you follow me and you like this guy, you're insane. His name is Scott Ritter. He is pro-Iranian, pro-Russian, pro-Syrian, and he's on all these shows. And then here is John Mersheimer. Mersheimer wrote a very famous book a few years ago with Stephen Walt, who works at Foreign Policy, called The Israel Lobby. Mersheimer is a University of Chicago professor. By the way, did we have a president who was a teacher at the University of Chicago Law School recently? Yeah, sometimes we call it the O'Biden administration. So I want you to listen to what Mersheimer, this is an editorial cartoon, but look at what Scott Ritter says. You know, he says this. He calls himself the weapons inspector. He's all over social media. He's free now because he finished his sentence for solicitation of a young girl for sex. He spent time in prison in Pennsylvania, so he's free now, so it's okay. You know, he's I'm sure he's a great character.
Oh yeah.
He makes my skin crawl, and he says, it means the he's replying to Caroline. It means the beginning of the end of Israel, a criminal enterprise led by literal war criminals. Indictment Day should become an international holiday.
Gosh.
So Judge Napolitano talks to John Mersheimer, the University of Chicago professor. He wrote a book called The Israel Lobby about how you guys have all the money. Did you know that?
Well, we control the banks.
Right.
And the media. And the media and the government. And, right. And Hollywood.
Like the Seven Mountains. Like
absolutely.
We're talking about. You're the dominionist
already. It's about time you realize that.
I know. And so, like, here's an editorial cartoon. Uncle Sam feeding the Netanyahu monster. You see that? You see the imagery? This is from the Tehran Times, I think, today. So here's Judge Napolitano. We think of him, what? Great conservative, Fox News. We love him, right? Don't trust him.
I don't watch Fox News anymore.
Do not trust him at all. Here's his interview with John Mersheimer, where everybody says, oh, he's the greatest geopolitical expert in the world. Here we go.
The idea that you're going to defeat Hamas once and for all, and then the Israelis are going to live happily ever after, that's not going to happen.
Is this going to end diplomatically, or is it going to end with a wider regional war?
Well, I hope I'm wrong, it's going to end diplomatically. I believe it's just going to go on and on. And what that means is that the potential for a wider war is always there, right? Can I say one way or the other that you are going to get a wider war? No, I don't know. We just don't know where this train is headed. But the potential for horizontal escalation is significant.
Oh, I'm good.
Olivier was noting the time.
Not for my plane, because you told him it was 1 hour.
We got a little bit of a late start.
Okay, yeah.
And then hours. It's kind of
ish,
like
it's Jewish hour.
About an hour.
A Jewish hour.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Know what an hour is.
I do know what an hour is. I used to bill them.
just so that you know, at our friend's Andy Woods' church, who preaches very long, he says that his church there's no clock on the end. There's a calendar. So that's what you need to do when it's prophecy hour. You should put a calendar on
that's
the wall.
That's right. So this was an interview with. This is the Israel foreign minister who was saying we're gonna. Suspend the Rafah op if we get the hostages back. That was the Israel foreign minister on Channel 12
suspend
News today.
Suspend or postpone?
Well,
they wouldn't say.
He said arrest warrants from The Hague, absolute hypocrisy if necessary, will not leave the country. For a deal, we will suspend the operation in Rafah. That's what he said in this interview on Channel 12. And this is where they played the hostage video and that sort of thing.
I want to bring a little bit of a biblical perspective here.
Okay.
It's really not going to take long because I just want to bring us back to Zechariah 12. And we should be disgusted with all this. We should be upset. We should do everything we can. Again, this brings us back to what can we do in America? You can support ministries that will make a difference. You can help, you know, prepare to help Jewish people and receive them in your homes and have a chance to share the gospel with them. That's the idea behind our ministry. But in Zechariah 12, verse 3, but it will be on that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples, and all who heave it up will be severely injured, and all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it. Well, we shouldn't be surprised. And right now, we are living in the days where the whole world, faster than I expected, is turning against Israel. And you know what? As crazy as it is, it also should be an encouragement to us believers, because it proves one more time, in a negative way, that the Bible is true.
Yes.
And that God is going to finish His program. And in verse 9, of that same chapter, and it will be in that day that I will seek, God is speaking, I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. So I tell you, friends, it should be encouraging to us to know that what God is saying is happening. It's bad that it's happening to my people, and we want to make sure as many as possible know Yeshua, and I will never say that enough, but it just confirms that the Bible is without error, and that God is gonna, you know, the promises of God stand forever. So anyway,
well, so I've used this graphic before, because you say the nations gathered against Israel. So about 7 years ago, 6.5 years ago, Erdogan's one of his main mouthpiece newspapers in Turkey. You know, and he 8 months ago, he's planning to come to Israel. He's our friend. We're normalizing relations. But back in 2017, you know, during the time of the Abraham Accords and the Jerusalem embassy being moved, to Jerusalem, that was, it was actually right after Trump announced that. Erdogan has this big conference and his newspaper publishes this map. Okay, so you know Andy, I know Andy, and all these guys, we all have our Ezekiel 38 maps.
Yeah.
This is one of the Ezekiel 38 players' maps.
Yeah.
And he published in a major newspaper in Turkey. You can still find it online. And then there's also a web page, you know, the maps that you make up.
Interactive.
And interactive map that everything is pointing right at Israel from all the Arab countries.
Yeah, because Israel is such a thorn in the flesh of the Middle East. It's so big, it's
taken
over.
Big and scary.
Big and scary, and we control everything, obviously.
It's interesting, though. Iran did this on one of their maps, too, when they put in Israel. Look at that. It's all of Israel from the river to the sea is Israel.
Right.
Iran has done that too.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They have bad editors.
Right, that's interesting. There's no Gaza and no Judea.
There's no Gaza, there's no West Bank. It's Israel.
Now, watch this. Jews in America and in Europe are being forced to move to Israel. If the Lord tarries, you're going to see a decrease in technology and innovation in the countries where the Jews left. I'm not saying we're better, we're smarter. I'm just saying 22% of the Nobel Prizes in the world, and it's only been since 1904, are from Jews who make up 0.02% of the world population. If the Jews move from those countries and move to Israel. Look what happened when the Russian Jews in the 80s came to Israel, all this innovation and things. And so just watch. Just watch. It's gonna bite us back. I mean, not us, but America or those countries where the Jews are leaving because they're forced to leave because of anti-Semitism. That's going to happen. So,
look, we said we'd go about an hour. It's been about an hour, even in my time frame. And so
I'll have to come back.
I appreciate your final words. We'll have to have you back. We'll have to get together online sometime.
Yes.
And talk some more. And because we really could go for a long. I mean, we were talking all night last night and at dinner. And we never lack for anything to talk about, especially in today's day and age.
I'll call him and we set up the show on my channel and I said, so we're going to talk about this, and then he starts telling me, and I, after 10 minutes of not being able to say anything, he said, stop, keep it for the show.
I have to get warmed up. It's like it's a exercise.
Okay.
It's like working out.
I see.
So by the way, this is Jerusalem in 1937. Look at the area south of the Temple Mount. It's the village is not really there yet, the Arab village of Silwan. Now, wait a minute. I thought the Arabs lived all over that land. I thought they lived in Jerusalem and controlled everything. That's an aerial picture in 1937. There's nothing there. Now, if you go there to today, this is a more recent one. Why is that not moving? You can see their buildings and everything down there. It changed.
Well, yeah.
Because there was an operation. Because why? Because the Jews were moving in. They had to go get the land. And all this stuff about stolen land and all this stuff, this is a bunch of nonsense. You need to follow a British lawyer named Natasha Halsdorf with the UK Lawyers for Israel, UKLIFI. She's phenomenal, very bright. She's a lawyer. Sort of assume that.
Not always.
No.
I do. Careful.
I forgot. No. I forgot what I was going to say. No. I won't. Did you ever show your people and the people online the flag of Palestine prior to, you know what I'm talking about?
Right. Yeah, I don't have it handy right here.
Okay. Well, it's actually, you can you do a quick search? I'll tell you what to search for.
Okay.
Okay. It's and we'll finish with that. Just
he's dragging this out.
Okay. Okay. So LARO
ARO
SSE 1939 Palestine flag.
I must have searched.
I own. Okay.
This one.
Yeah. This one. So go to this picture. Actually, it's better. He goes, look on the left. This is
okay,
a dick.
I've got to get the.
You got to get.
I've got to copy it and put it into the.
Okay, so it's a dictionary. I honed it. It's a French dictionary that's been published yearly since. In 1939, it was like their 250th edition. Yearly. So it's been going forever. It's the Larousse Dictionary, and I have a copy of it. It's about that big, and it's got a page, a double page with flags. 1939 was 9 years before Israel was created as a modern state. On the left page, third from the left, you got France, Albania, and Allemagne. Allemagne is Germany. 1939, Germany was Nazi Germany, so that was their flag. That makes sense, okay? Now go to the next page, go three from the top, three from the left, you've got the flag of Palestine, which is not the one you see today. The one you see today is the Jordan flag minus that little star. It's almost identical. This is the flag of Palestine. All the coins, the Palestinian coins that I have three of those at home, they say Palestina, Philistine, Palestina in Hebrew, and Palestine in English. And I have a coin from 1931, and next to the word Palestina in Hebrew, there is a parenthesis with an Aleph, and you can do Palestinian coin 1937, they'll find it. I'm putting him to work. Yeah. There is an Aleph and a Yod, and those two letters are for Eretz Israel. The Palestinian coins have the word Eretz, land of Israel, on each and every one of them, up, you know, from 20 years before Israel was a nation. Any of those, it's right there.
Okay, let me...
And I'm not making it up. It must be true, it's on the internet. I have those coins. When I teach on this, I bring a coin with me and I bring the dictionary. I was not doing that today, but because people go like, well, you know, here it is. And so so Palestine was just a landmass that, you know, from the Romans, it got called that. Okay, so you see the third, you've got Arabic, then English, then Hebrew. Hebrew reads from right to left. So you've got Palestina, and in parenthesis, an Aleph, looks like an X, and a little apostrophe, that's the Yod. Aleph, Yod, initials for Eretz Yisrael, 1937. That one, I have one from 37, from 35, different dates. But prior to 1948, Palestine was Israel. Nobody cared. They started the agenda of the displaced people to take it to where it is today, when nobody knows, and they care about the displaced people. That's how this has been turned around. Anyway, I'm going to miss my plane.
No, you're not. I'm driving.
You're driving.
So, a year and a half ago, I went to the Israeli Media Summit, Christian Media Summit. They took us down to the City of David, and the excavations and stood open the pilgrimage roads from the Pool of Siloam all the way up to the Temple Mount. But they told us a story about beneath the walkway is a sewer. In 70 AD, when the Romans were coming against Jerusalem, the last group of Jewish people that survived were found in that sewer right under our feet. Others had fled to Masada, and we know what happened to Masada in 73 AD, 3 years later. But right near them, they found a coin minted by the rebels. And what did the coin say? For the hope of Zion. That hope brought them back. And I believe, you're an Arnold Fruchtenbaum person, Jesus will return in response to their plea. That's Hosea chapter 5 and 6. We're living at that time.
Yeah.
So we got to go. Olivier, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll have you back.
Thank you. God bless.
Close us in prayer.
Remember to sign up on Shalom and Messiah. We need your prayers, we need your support, and we need to stay connected with you if you're interested in the network. Lord, thank you for this opportunity again to look at what's going on in the world. We look at this, we get angry, we get upset, we get frustrated, but we also know, Lord, that this, none of it surprises you. You know everything that's happening, and none of it is beyond your control. We know that you control everything, and we know that you're coming back. Your son is coming back, and that the end is coming soon. And we know that the end of the story ends well for those who are in the family of God. So, Lord, we thank you for including us in your family by giving us this great opportunity, this free gift, to just follow Yeshua, the Messiah, and if anybody listening today online are not connected to the family of God, if you're not a believer, a follower of Yeshua, Jesus, simply by believing that he is the Son of God, he is the Messiah, and you just want to follow him, you want to accept him as your Savior, you become a child of God, and you are in God's family, and nobody can take that away from you. And Lord, we thank you for that free gift. In Yeshua's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful.